Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And for hour two of today's show, it's my great pleasure, as always, to welcome Josh Jackson to Truth News. And today we're going to be looking at technological trends. And this is something we're going to be looking at on a regular basis with Josh. Josh is quite an expert in various areas of technology and has worked professionally as an animator for large television studios. And we're planning to really focus on some important areas and emerging areas and sort of feed that into the general discussion that we have on what is important to human lifestyles, freedom, and general quality of life. Because as I always find, with every technological advancement, there is always a plus and a minus. Even say with the invention of fire. I mean, the invention of fire was an incredibly amazing and powerful thing that empowered people. But of course, the ability to start fires allowed human beings to destroy a lot of things as well. And the same thing applies to creation of weapons. Weapons enabled human beings to hunt and get food in a variety of ways, but it also allowed them to kill each other in a variety of ways. And so it goes on through the eons, through the millennia. Anyway, without further ado, Josh, welcome, and how are you, my friend?
Good. It's fantastic to be back on the show. You know, one thing I wanted to say about the fire thing, and I always find technology, like you said, it's a two-edged sword.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's a two-edged sword in multiple ways. So a lot of people say, well, it's, you know, we're evolving with this technology. We're getting better and better at things. So, but I also think we're de-evolving with technology, because, for instance, fire, most kids, you know, maybe three or four generations ago would have grown up, you know, in understanding how to make fire with two sticks and a piece of string.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're in scouts nowadays, you're not going to really learn that, because once the lighter got invented, or the matchstick, it was like, well, I can have fire instantly. But you no longer have to learn how to make fire. So in one way, we've evolved that we can make fire instantly. But if we don't have that tool, we don't have any fire, because we just don't know how to do it anymore.
And if I might just jump in with another example, it's the invention of the pocket calculator, of course, was a tremendous aid to daily tasks, more or less invalidated the need to do hand arithmetic and particularly long division, right? And I don't think anyone knows how to do long division anymore, right? But there was a time when that really wasn't needed, because without the calculator, you really need to do long division if you want to do those sort of calculations. It appears that new technologies piggyback on older technologies, but then they basically obviate the knowledge that goes with the older technology, so we only then rely on the later evolution of that.
Yeah.
But as you say, it can put you into a difficult situation.
Yeah, and I know that certain schooling, I think the Steiner schools, before a student can get on a computer, they have to actually know how a computer works. So they teach you what is a computer, and they open them up and show you what they are and how they work. So I think, you know, obviously the human can't learn everything, but I think, you know, if we look at the internet as a whole, we're almost as a society that has internet on tap, able to just switch off our memory banks to say, well, actually switch off two things. Switch off asking your friend or family about something, and because you just ask Google, you ask your smartphone, and also switch off memorizing anything, because, well, I could just ask my smartphone or ask the internet or You know, I mean, some fridges have the internet now.
Indeed.
You just ask, you know, how do I do this? Or it's just always in the cloud.
Now, Josh, have you ever had the experience of Google basically going down? This is actually a rather weird thing, and this has never happened to me before, but yesterday I found that Google was not working. All the other websites were working. Everything was – the internet was fine, just Google wasn't working, right? But without Google, again – life comes to a standstill. You can't do anything because you can't search. And what I found, and I don't know whether this was just a regional problem that I was experiencing, but I was able to search, but none of the links were working, because when you do a Google search, it doesn't give you a direct link. It gives you a Google link, which then redirects to the actual link. And so I was getting these links, clicking on them, and it was going to Google to redirect and then failing. And so I really couldn't do anything at all because Google wasn't working.
Yeah, I have had that once. It was maybe six years ago. No, it wasn't even that long ago because YouTube was already around. Anyhow, it was just after YouTube, and I'd sort of gotten used to YouTube. And, a lot of their mechanisms went down at once. I'm not quite sure. It was just and other sites were working because I'd check out other main portals like Microsoft, and and it really did. It caused this like, oh my god, what? And then I went, oh well, that's okay. I'll just check my email and said, oh, that's down too. I'll just go and do some word processing. Oh, that's because Google have their foot in so many pies.
Yeah. If you're using Google Docs and various other tools like that, Gmail, you can't just go check your email. You can't just go exactly.
No, their stinky toes are all over those pies. So, but you know, what we wanted to talk about today was this two-edged thing, and I think it's quite interesting when it comes to tracking. I mean, the internet, you know, Assange's book has been released. And
Cypherpunks, I believe it's called, yes.
Yeah, Cypherpunks. And it's based on an interview that he did for RT. It was sort of a roundtable between all these cypherpunks of late. And a very good interview. In fact, it's up on our Facebook page if you want to go on there and be tracked.
Great.
Look forward to it. It's a really good interview. It's well worth watching. It goes for almost 2 hours with part two. There's part one for 1.5 hours. I'm not sure of part two, but yeah, it's fantastic. The guy from the Tor project is there. Some other old school cypherpunks. Cypher means it's an encryption word. It's the encryption language. So it was this whole movement to go online. It started in the 80s it originally was to have transactions without other people, a third party, listening, because the third party is guessed to always be listening.
Right.
So if you want to have a transaction, especially a financial transaction with another person, you had to get past person, if you wanted to pay C, if you were A and you wanted to pay C, you had to watch out for B, and it was, B was always listening. So you had to create these ciphers, which are keys in a cryptographic terminology, and these punks were because they were young kids, they were really just hackers. And so this notion of cypherpunk arose, and this interview is with some of these original guys, which Julian Assange was also part of.
Right, yeah, it sounds like a great little interview. So that's actually on our Facebook page, and we might even play a little of that for you in the next segment.
So,
go ahead.
So, just one thing I want to say, one thing that they point out in their interview is that, to listen in on the internet nowadays is really quite a cheap thing. Poor countries can do it quite easily, because compared to the cost of defense budgets, the defense budgets are so huge that these internet surveillance technologies are literally, you spend a couple of million bucks and you're there, 20 million bucks maybe. It's really nothing. And so you can pretty much know that every country is listening to everything.
Yeah, yeah, because it's the cheapest and easiest thing for any government to implement.
Yeah, and for anyone to think that they're not, and this is why I think people, you know, I've been mucking around lately with it's called a Pretty Good Privacy.
Oh, okay, it's yeah.
PGP, and yeah. And it's, you know, it's a quite an interesting way of securing your email. Because you know, if you run a business or you're just a friend, I mean, you know, the funny thing is with technology is that when you email someone, like if I'm to email you, we tend to think, well, you know, if we're not talking anything that should be secure, then you know, it shouldn't matter if people listen in. But yeah, really, you know, imagine if you're at home and you're talking to your wife or your spouse, and you wouldn't really like it if your neighbor could hear everything you do. It would make you feel weird.
Pretty right? Creepy, yeah.
It would feel creepy. If you're on the street and you're sitting there talking and someone just comes up and stands right next to you, even though you're just talking about, I don't know, the latest episode of Big Brother, just yeah, to mix it up. You wouldn't like someone to come along and be the big brother by standing there listening in on you.
Oh, of course even not. Though, and I mean, yeah, people are very sensitive about talking about personal things in public for that reason, because we value our privacy and we don't just blurt out, you know, in a loud voice something about, you know, something very personal we did in the bedroom on the weekend, do we? We don't, yeah, because well, we know other
even,
people might
even
be listening.
If it's not personal, even if it's just what I had for dinner last night. I just, there's something about not wanting people to know. And look, if you want to go on Twitter and tweet what you had for dinner last night or Facebook, that's your action putting it out there.
Yeah, that's your choice then, yeah.
Yeah, that's a choice. And plenty of people do it. I'm even guilty of, you know, tweeting a good meal. Not tweeting it, but, you know, putting it on Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
And saying, wow, look at this nice salad, you know, my wife made. And but, yeah, look, we'll talk about this after the break.
We will indeed. We will continue with that after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and you can find us at truthnews.com.au and join the conversation, leave a message, join the Facebook page. We welcome your input. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
No matter where you go in your life, at some point you're going to need somebody to stand by you. Oh, yeah, oh, my darling, stand by me. No matter who you are, no matter where you go, you gon' need somebody to
talk, and that move is the only light we see.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's a great pleasure and an honor to be talking to you today, wherever you may be, whether you're joining us on the live networked show out of Austin, Texas, or whether you're podcasting us. You're most welcome, and if you'd like to get more involved, we welcome that as well. Currently, this is not actually going out live, but I will be live in future broadcasts, and I'll always give you the live number that you can call if you would like to join the conversation. So, Josh, just to pick up there where we left off, so we're talking a little about tweeting and the need of government to feed on that type of information. And I've just got an article here which dovetails really nicely with that subject. And here's an article from news.com.au. And it's from just quite a recent article from 22nd of November 2012. Government to get new software to spy on social media conversations. The Australian government is developing a new software to monitor citizens' social media conversations. The purpose of one tool, called Emergency Situational Awareness, ESA for short, is to give emergency services early warning about disasters. It's taken the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation 3 years to develop and is being trialled by the Defence Department, the Queensland Government and Geoscience Australia. ESA works by mining publicly available Twitter profiles to detect clusters of tweeted words such as fire, earthquake or storm, and then passes that information on to the emergency authorities. Oh, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, I'm sure it also looks for other things. But I find it interesting that it took 3 years to basically, you know, doing a search for the term or a hashtag and then collating those into some sort of...
Further on here, the CSIRO admits that this technology has a political dimension and could be used for public relations purposes. It's funny they use the word public relations. It makes it all sound very fluffy, doesn't it? PR, yes. Well, there's a political dimension, but it could be used for public relations. Well, actually, it could be used for political suppression. Okay. Anyway, obviously, it could be used in a variety of ways. When you're mining information, you can apply that. The sky's the limit, isn't it, as to how you would apply it?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's totally. If you know, and the thing is with surveillance, and this is a very important key, because a lot of people say, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, then you shouldn't care. If you're not saying anything, if you're not making bombs, if you're not a terrorist, if you're not a drug dealer, if you're not any of these baddies, then any government surveillance is a good thing. Look, it isn't a perfect world. It isn't a perfect world.
Well, can I just quickly interject? Because the definition of doing something wrong changes from year to year and from country to country.
Okay.
So what might be perfectly innocent and okay this year could be something wrong next year.
Exactly. And that's the point I was getting to, is that right now with a benign government, but all of a sudden, and look, folks, it's happened over and over and over, where all of a sudden, and you may think that could never happen here. It could never happen. Well, the citizens of the country where it's happened to have always thought the same. But all of a sudden, a new government comes in place, or something happens with the economy where everyone's peed off and they need to take it out on someone, on some race or something, and they just start ethnically cleansing, or they start taking out people with certain views, or, we don't like people that read the Bible or the Quran or the whatever sort of book We don't like people that follow Julian Assange. We don't like people that talk about freedom on the internet. We don't like people that that turn on their lights too often during Earth Hour. We don't like people that, you know, it can come from somewhere where you think, oh, yeah, that's normal, to something that's totally ludicrous, like having, an expensive electricity bill or whatever, because you're using up too much resources of the collective. You know, so there's it's about protecting ourselves from something that could happen in the future, and being able to say, look, we don't want the government to have these sort of powers because not of what we're doing now, but what the government might think is evil tomorrow.
And what is your take on the actual application of this technology? I find it quite bizarre when they talk about using the monitoring of social media conversations to identify a bushfire. And you know, today we're talking about technology, we're talking about the pros and cons of technology, but this seems to be an example of a really obtuse application of technology, which I don't even really think I even believe in. I don't even think I believe it's real, because I think it's using a Twitter to alert us to bushfires is just, on the face of it, just utterly ludicrous.
I mean, the thing is that, let's be honest, folks. You know, apart from Truth News Twitter feed, the rest of Twitter is a load of garbage. I mean, no one uses this. I mean, look, maybe a few people do, but really, if you go onto Twitter, it's basically marketers marketing to marketers. It's just a bunch of marketers marketing stuff or marketing strategy to other marketers, trying to gain as many Twitter followers. It's like where MySpace was back in the day, where as many friends as you could possibly have to show how many friends you got, and it was totally silly. Twitter, it really, I don't find it a good technology. And the other thing is, this is a typical waste of money of the state, you know. There's plenty of software out there, probably even some free data mining software for Twitter that can do exactly what they wanted by scouring Twitter and finding keywords. I mean, you know, the stock exchange has used that for years since the launch to try and garner some sort of understanding of what the market is going to do before it does it by understanding trends. And it's really, why, you know, it's really not such a big thing. The other thing is that, you know, most people are actually on Facebook, which is considered a dark net because it's not publicly available as such if you've set your settings correctly.
Yes.
It's behind a password. So you need to become a friend of mine to see what I'm doing. So the government can't really, unless it's got direct permission of Facebook, just to have access to everyone without any sort of subpoena or court order. It doesn't have access to my Facebook feed. So you know, of course, you know, I don't really believe that. I think,
indeed. Well, I don't believe simply because they tell me that it's okay, or that you know, that my privacy is protected, that it is. What I do know is that you quite often give it away when you sign up to a Facebook app. Anyway, we'll be right back after this break. You're with Truth News Radio. Stay with us.
She said she learned the hard way. Said she wanna spare the children. She say don't give a say your soul away, cause all that you have is your soul. So don't be tempted by the shiny apple, don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice, hunger only for a world of truth, cause all that you have is your soul.
Hi, welcome back. You're tuned to Truth News Radio. Today we're talking about technology with Josh Jackson. And we're talking about the two-edged sword of technology. We're talking about the way technology can be used and misused, and the way it may even be represented to us in a dishonest way. So you may have a technology which is being represented as only having one function, whereas in fact it has another function. And just to go back to that example there of the monitoring of social media, well, the government says it has a very valid, good reason for doing that, because it wants to keep an eye on bushfires. But of course, there are a lot of other things the government would like to keep an eye on too, beyond bushfires. Perhaps opinions about the government. And of course, why wouldn't they want to do a little bit of advanced polling by monitoring what people are talking about in the lead up to an election? That's a really creepy, slippery slope there, isn't it? I mean, what's your take on that, Josh?
Well, they already do. I mean, you know, of course. Before, they used to just keep an eye on the newspapers, what they were saying, because the newspapers were dictating what people were thinking to a large extent. And nowadays, it's less so. I mean, it is by the mainstream media still has a lot, but a lot of what people are thinking now are dictated by what their friends are saying on Facebook and Twitter and all these places, Google Plus. So, you know, they're just moving into that area. And there's so many things with technologies that are really good thing, you know, like having a smartphone. I mean, how amazing is this tool? The iPhone or an Android or a Windows phone, they're computers. You know, they're not phones anymore. They're computers with a walkie-talkie in it, with a phone in it.
Yeah.
And what they can do for you is so amazing. I mean, remember the days where you'd go and meet a friend somewhere without phones, before phones? You meet a friend somewhere and you're like, you know, running 5 minutes late, and you get there and your friend's not there.
Yeah.
And so then you're like, oh, did I miss him, or has he not arrived yet, or she? And you wait, and then you wait, you know, half an hour, and you think, oh, no, I must have missed, or I've waited this long, I should wait, you know, what if they arrive just as I leave? And it's just, it's horrible, you know, all this sort of stuff. Nowadays, you just ring them up.
Anytime. Straight up.
Anytime, and go, hey, I'm running, you know, a bit late. And it, or you know, just
and not only that, you can tweet them, you know, with a smartphone, you can tweet them and you can geolocate yourself on Google Maps, and you never have to be lonely ever again. Of course, the dark side of that, again, is that when people do meet up and you see all these people sitting together in pubs and coffee shops, and they're all just looking at their smartphones and not even talking to each other.
Yeah, they're talking to their, having virtual beers with their virtual mates.
Yeah, they catch up, they all get together, and then they're all sitting there looking, typing away, scrolling through their phones.
And I've been guilty of it too. I mean, you know, you get an important SMS through or an email, and you have to quickly answer it. But the thing is, you know, it goes from benign thing like meeting your mates to amazing things like creating revolutions where people just say, man, well, screw this. I'm over this tyranny. And, there's a meeting here, there's a meeting there. And it can be in bad ways as well, like we saw in the Cronulla riots, where everyone just SMSs each other and this viral thing happens, and then you get this mob come to you. Or it happens at house parties too. You see it with teenagers.
Yes.
But, you know, it's always two-edged. It's the yin and the yang, and that's you know, something that's got to be always kept in check. And if we look at something like GPS, and a lot of people think, oh, GPS is tracking me and all this stuff, but actually GPS is quite benign. It's you're just listening to it. It's using the Doppler effect to triangulate your position between three or more satellites. And the thing is that it's not actually understanding where you are. The fact that the actual tracking of a mobile phone happens at the cell tower level and the internet, so that when you get the GPS coordinates, Google Maps needs to know where you are. So you then fire those coordinates off to the internet, telling the internet where you are.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, but I think there's an exception to that. I think the iPhone has a feature where it will actually send a GPS coordinate information back to Apple as part of one of its security features.
I think, there was a big deal about that, but I think what it is now is that it's officially, with Apple, they, although there are a lot of people hacking Apple like crazy to find out what's going on, but it's used to a find my phone capability. So if someone steals your phone, you can actually log in and look at a map of where your phone exactly is, and then wipe the phone remotely.
But that means that your phone is transmitting its location back to a hub somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, back to a central server. So, this is, again, the two-edged sword.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people, will use just the old-school GPS where the maps are actually downloaded into the device so that you don't have a radio signal out. These are what a lot of hikers used to use, where you have they were the original GPSs that you grabbed, you had your maps downloaded locally, and the coordinate would place you on that map. And so you wouldn't have to go to the web, pull the map of that region. And they do that for a reason, because the maps for Google are so ridiculously large.
Yes.
You can actually cache them now. So you can say, well, I'm going to be visiting this area. Please download them before I leave. And then you can put your phone into airplane mode and it won't phone home.
Oh, that's so nice.
No doubt, yeah. So you can do things like that, especially if you're traveling out into the middle of nowhere, or a long road trip where there's not much cell coverage. People do that.
So does that mean you can use your GPS in your phone without having an internet connection?
Yeah.
I didn't know you can do that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, the new Google Maps lets you do that. Lets you download a region.
A region. So your GPS is completely decoupled from your internet connection.
You can, in fact, put it into airplane mode. As long as you have a GPS radio on, which is more of a receiver, really.
A receiver, right. Oh, that's a very interesting tip. Thanks.
Yeah, so, I don't know if people want to look at GPSs. It's basically a GPS is – it actually stems from the Second World War. They had ground-based mapping mechanisms, and in the 1960s, the U.S. Department of Defense launched these 24 satellites, and these 24 satellites became the GPS network. But they only really – it took from the 1960s, they only became fully functional around 1994. So it's taken a while, but since then, the European Union want to launch the Galileo project, which is the European GPS system. The Chinese have some other system called the Compass Navigation System, and India has their own. So these technologies are getting better, and some of those technologies might have a back channel. I'm not sure of these new ones, but the original GPS that we're still on now doesn't have a back channel.
Okay, right. Now, just getting back to what you were saying there about the power of some of these technologies to enable mass action, social change, again, I just wanted to highlight the positive and the negative there, because although that's very true, and you know, Truth News Radio is an example of that. Of course, we've influenced millions of people around the globe, and being slightly sarcastic there, but we have influenced some people, okay? But the point is, these alternative media channels and Facebook groups and Twitter are able to provide that sort of impetus to mobilize people. But at the same time as that, and that we've had very credible reports that the CIA had commissioned social media virtualization software that enables them to create entities and put them on Facebook that are completely fake, and that they can then create thousands or millions of these entities to actually socially engineer any outcome they want. So again, we're going to break. We'll be right back with Truth News Radio Australia.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. Been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife.
Welcome back, you tuned to Truth News. And we're today discussing technology on the sort of macro level, the pros and cons, the pluses and the minuses, and we're just probing into various instances of how technology has enabled or disabled or disempowered the human race. And I was just highlighting there the fact that the social media sites may well have been infiltrated by these virtualization software robots. Do you know anything about that, Josh? And what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, robots are still pretty easy to discover when you're chatting to them. You can floor Siri, which is Apple's virtual assistant on the iPhone, which was released on the iPhone 4S and 5. And it's an amazing thing. I mean, it's actually an old technology. So Apple didn't invent it. It's been around for a long time, where you could talk to an artificial intelligence. It's just gotten a lot better, because of the massive amount of data that's been able to mine on the internet. So if you could talk to a robot, you talk to it and say, "Hey, you know," and we all know it because of the ads and stuff. "Hey, what's this? What's the sports score from the Bulls right now?" And it'll come back and tell you, or "What's the weather in Africa?" And Siri will go off and then tell you and speak to you. And it's harder to, you know, with a voice, you can hear it. And that's actually getting a lot better. So they're sounding more and more human. But with text, it just comes back with text. And you can sometimes think, "Wow, I'm talking to someone here."
Yeah.
And companies use it for artificial help desk. So you go on and you just say, "Hey, I was just wondering, have a, you know, some question," and it'll come back and feed you an answer depending on previous answers or knowledge that it's been programmed with. So, and they can sound very human. And so I haven't heard of the specific thing that you have, but it doesn't surprise me at all.
And And there was a lot of discussion that the Arab Spring, which many people think is a good thing, and I'm not saying it's either a good thing or a bad thing, but a lot of people have suggested that the Arab Spring was somewhat co-opted or maybe pushed in a certain direction through the use of some of these artificial Facebook agencies, and there was some research that was done on that, and they found that, you know, 10,000 Facebook accounts had suddenly sprung into existence. There was something anomalous in the way Facebook suddenly en masse was being used to create social movements during the Arab Spring.
Mm. That's fascinating. Wow.
And there's always this two-sided thing. There's always this double-edged sword, because some of what happened during that was important and necessary, and we saw a real urge to freedom and democracy in Egypt. But then what we saw in Libya appeared to be co-opted. It appeared to be U.S. foreign policy. We had a genuine social movement looking for liberating people somehow get co-opted and turn into a spearhead for U.S. and Anglo-imperialism.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, with Facebook is that you do need to be friends with someone. So, you know, the CIA can't just create 1,000 things and instantly have all this influence, because first you have to sort of be friends with someone, unless you're subscribed to them. To subscribe to someone, you have to actually find them interesting enough to do that action.
Yes.
But also, Facebook has this thing where it's not something with Facebook. It's actually more about the human psyche, is that we tend to trust our friends that we know in the real world.
Yeah.
And so when our friends say, yeah, I'm going out to conquer Mubarak, and then you go, yeah, man, I'm going to join him. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And so it does, you know, it's a bit hard to believe that they would have used technology like Facebook, which has a few more just inherently not built because of it, but inherently built in things where it's a bit hard for them to do that. Twitter, on the other hand, is extremely public. If you tweet, your tweet is out there. And if you all of a sudden have 1,000 people tweeting, let's overthrow Mubarak, then all of a sudden Mubarak or overthrow or hash Mubarak or these tags start trending, which then cause real people to come in, have a look at the tag, retweet it or move it, which then trends it in a real sense. So
the real avenue for this in Facebook is not through direct friends. It's through Facebook groups and Facebook fan pages, because it's very easy to once you've become part of a network. Actually, it does apply to friends as well. Correction, it also applies to friends, because once you've kind of become part of a group in Facebook, and I don't mean that in an official way. I don't actually mean like a Facebook group. I just mean in real terms, if you are part of a movement of people in the world, you will start to have more friends that are in that movement. And then what will start to happen is that you will be prompted to make friends with other people based on their friends that you are friends with, right? So this is Facebook has an algorithm to do this. So it tends to aggregate people based on their interests. So it would be very easy to infiltrate a Facebook network in that way, because Facebook itself is going to prompt you to make friends with all these people you don't know simply because they're friends with people you're friends with. And I believe that's how it's done. I believe that's how this virtualized cyber social engineering is actually being done.
Yeah, so it's not instant. It would have to take at least a few months to infiltrate and gain trust.
Yeah, and then there'd be a snowball effect. So once it gets really big, it just and then once, if you did have a large number of robot entities in there, then it could just really take off. And of course, no one will ever really know what the mix is between the real and the fake people. And of course, in the end, it doesn't even matter, because by that point, there really is a revolution happening. And I think we've got to rethink our concepts of reality to some extent, because there are some things we'll never know.
Yeah. I mean, this is really the start of the robot wars, isn't it? I mean, it's just before the robots have physical bodies, it's all online. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it just shows you, doesn't it, that there is this constant tension between the good and the bad in everything that we do. You know, everything that we do, all the inventions that we've created have these two prongs, these two arms, and we cannot be sure where we are. Like, it's almost, we think, sometimes think there's a pendulum that's swinging back and forth. I don't know. You know, it's like there is the potential for great things, great liberation, great awareness, great achievements, and there is the potential for incredibly brutal, totalitarian, dehumanizing things to be done with our technologies.
Well, I mean, everyone goes on about the Stasi, right, and how crazy it was. In fact, I've got a story about that because I'm here in Berlin at the moment, and I'll change the names to protect the innocent.
Sure.
A friend of my father's was in a printer's, and he was there, and the printer said, Herr Schmidt, it was more of an uncommon name than Schmidt. Your print's ready. And this other guy was standing next to him, this strange guy, and he goes, Herr Schmidt. And my friend sort of turns over to him and says, yeah? He goes, I know you. He goes, my friend goes, what, really? And he goes, where? Where do you know me from? From, you know, Blaubachstrasse, so-and-so yeah. street.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, back in when I used to live there years ago, and that was in the East, right, with the Stasi.
Mm.
And he goes, oh, what's your name? He goes, my name is of no concern. And of course, my dad's mate's like, what the hell is this guy? Like, my name is of no concern, and he sort of says, well. You know what? And anyway, but then the guy got his printed, I don't know, business cards or whatever he got, and the guy just turns and walks off.
Incredible.
Without a guy, without anything.
Yeah.
And a friend of my dad says, yeah, he would have definitely been from the old Stasi. He would have been one of the guys maybe watching him. So you know, this sort of creepy thing, which is very real. Extremely real, is now happening on a robotic level and to a level that's far, that makes the Stasi look like, I don't know, makes the Stasi look like a child's game.
Yeah, like it was just a very primitive, bumbling attempt. The same applies to the Nazis. Of course, we know that the IBM got its leg up during the Nazi era by developing systems to help the Nazis monitor dissidents, and there's a lot of great research on that.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, though, you know, we really need to remember that the internet as a whole, in terms of technology, is a really, I mean, for me, I'm just so happy. It's like a savior to extreme tyranny. But Julian Assange's book sort of points to, it can also be the cause of tyranny. So
indeed, we will have to wind it up there. Sorry, Josh, we're just at the end of the hour. It's been awesome having you on, and we'd like to continue to do this on a regular basis. We'll be seeing you soon.
Thanks.
And you're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week. It's been great talking to you. See you then.